Good morning. I just need to say something. This is one of the greatest inventions ever. I have a personal fan. I couldn't be much happier. I generally stay pretty hot, warm, all that kind of stuff. And to have that fan is like, I can go for an hour and a half today, so I hope you're ready. Anyway, I'm Rusty, senior pastor at New Hope. So if you're on campus or if you're online, we're really glad you're here with us. We launched a series last weekend for Easter, this idea of love speaks louder. And it's an odd word. We use the word love all the time. Some of you, love this weather. Some of you hate it. Some of you love chocolate ice cream. Some of you can't stand anything dairy. I mean, there's such a difference in all of this. Like right now, I am extremely comfortable in this room, and some of you are miserably hot. Others of you are miserably cold. So some of you have, I love this. But the word gets used all the time. And what we're really called to do is figure out how to use this word properly, how to act it out in our relationships. So we saw that last weekend. God loved the world in a way that no one ever has. And he communicated in a way that is undeniable. And now we've got to do something with that. What are we going to do? So this week and the next 4 weeks, we're going to be looking at some specific ways we can show love. I want to read a couple of passages that are foundational for us. This is not long before Jesus' arrest and his execution. And his critics were constantly trying to trick him in all this. So this says here, but when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, another group that had been coming after him, they were more politically oriented. Now these Pharisees, they're more biblically oriented. They think they're going to catch him. They're just hoping to embarrass him publicly. One of them, an expert in religious law, tried to trap him with this question. Teacher, what is the most important commandment in the law of Moses? In other words, what if you boil down the Bible, what's the absolute most... This is the guy whose family later on invented Reader's Digest and those executive summaries. Can you just boil it all down? And he said, and Jesus replied, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. No surprise, they'd heard this before. They were just hoping he was going to do something. We see that gotcha politics, we didn't invent it. We've perfected it, but we didn't invent it. And Jesus goes on, though, with this question. He said, this is the first and greatest commandment. A second is equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the Bible's teachings can be fulfilled if you get this loving God with all you are and loving your neighbor as yourself. It's not new. It was not particularly earth-shattering. But as he was describing it later, it became really clear that these people could write papers, papers all about love and, the nuances of the different words and all this, but they weren't practicing it. They didn't really love God, and they didn't love their neighbor. And the idea of loving your neighbor, Jesus says this. He goes, love your neighbor as yourself. I've heard people debate this before, and they would say things like, until you can love yourself, you can't really love somebody else. So we need to spend a lot of time learning to love ourselves. That is not what this says. What he's saying is, you already know how to do this. You already know how to put yourself first. Most of you did this when you woke up this morning. The first person you thought about, it was you. When you were a baby, the first person you thought about was you. And, but you said mama and daddy. No, you're saying mama and daddy because you want something from them. I mean, some of us, we're really good at serving others, but a big reason we do it is so, someone will say thank you. I mean, this it's human nature to be self-centered. I'm not busting on us. I'm the same way. I didn't give you a fan. I didn't think about any of you this morning when I got up and decided to make coffee. I didn't think of you when I ground those beans. Now, Becky thinks that I thought a lot of her. I do, but I thought of myself first. This is human, and he said, I want you to, You already know how to love. What I want you to do now is focus that same ability that you've honed and crafted over the years on others. It's not tricky. It's a matter of the will. And as Jesus' church, we need to be the model of this. It needs to start within our family, and then it needs to spread out. A watching world wants to see if we know how to get this love thing right. If we do, they'll pay attention. They're going to ask some questions. But if they see us bickering and fighting and all this kind of mess and not learning to love each other, they're going to say, who needs that? And the answer is nobody. So Jesus said this. He goes, I'm giving you a new command. Love each other. Just as I have loved you, you should love each other. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples. So somehow we've got to get a handle on this thing. And some of us are working at it. Some of us have been kind of mailing it in. Some of us don't care. We've been given a command to do this. And in our relationships with others, you know, what we've devolved in our culture is, I'm going to speak the truth. I'm going to speak the truth. Well, if you're not loving people, the truth is going to fall on deaf ears, or the truth is going to be derided. We've got to figure out how to love. Jesus said this in Matthew 7. It's sometimes called the golden rule. He goes, here's a simple rule of thumb guide for behavior. Ask yourself what you want people to do for you, then grab the initiative and do it for them. That's real simple to read. Probably make a great poster. You could maybe put it on a t-shirt. But living it out is very, very different. We know how to love ourselves. We know how to put our needs and interests first. He's saying, I want you to shift that. If you follow me, I want you to shift that and start. Like, if you want people to respect you, start deliberately showing other people respect. If you want people to understand you, ask them questions and listen to what they have to say. That's a lot easier to preach about it than it is to do it. But we're all called to do it. Loving others well requires understanding them and then striving to meet their needs. And to help us be really practical, this week and the next four, we're using a book by Dr. Gary Chapman. Dr. Chapman, he's a pastor, he's an author, he's a counselor, he's got all kind of degrees. And back in the early 90s, like 1992, he wrote this book, The Five Love Languages. It was an abysmal, poor seller the first year. Since then, he sold 20 million copies. It's perennially on the New York Times bestseller list, usually in the top five, often number one. And he says that in his experience of watching people and all this kind of stuff, he says there's five basic ways people receive love. First one we're looking at this week, words of affirmation, then quality time, receiving gifts, acts of service, and physical touch. We've asked people to take the quiz. Some of you haven't yet. Yes, I'm looking at you. It doesn't really matter. You taking it's not as important as people around you taking it, people at home, people at work, people that you regularly meet with. Because remember, this is information we need to have so we can know how to love others well. And so I just want to encourage you to do it. Take the quiz. It doesn't take very much time at all. And Dr. Chapman says one of the things, even if you haven't done the quiz or your friends don't take it, all you have to do is watch people. And you can get a pretty good idea what their particular love language, how they receive love is. It doesn't take a ton of analysis, but you can watch it. Watch what they do to others to try to express love, or listen to what they complain or whine about that others haven't done for them. People just naturally kind of are bent this way. So if we just put here's an example. So you've got a husband, and let's say his love language is acts of service. And so what he does is he goes, you know, I'm going to really show love to my wife. I'm going to go out and wash and detail her car. And he does it. He spends all kind of doing it. He comes in. He's all sweaty and stuff. And she doesn't notice it because it doesn't mean a thing to her. She's not even sure which car is hers. And keeping it clean. I'm not saying I married someone like that, but I might have. Probably did. And And maybe the wife's love language is words of affirmation. So for his birthday, she writes him, she doesn't get a card. Well, she gets a card, but inserted in that card are 5 pages, 10-point font, front and back of all the ways she loves her husband. And he's looking at it and thinking, where's the gift? I'm not saying that's ever happened either, but I'm saying it could. Sometimes you've done something at work and you're thinking, I am sure that this coworker is going to love this. And they don't even notice what you gave them because it's not the way they operate. I used to own a business, and I realized that some of the people that worked for me were motivated by a bonus, but not all of them. And I started asking, I said, what helps you feel, I didn't say love, that would have been, I didn't say that. I just said, what motivates you? And some of them said, well, time off, bonus is nice. Another one caught me off guard and said, I'd like to be involved in the decision-making as we're going along, long before we establish a contract. Different ways of feeling loved and respected and appreciated. This is just the way it is. And it doesn't take long to figure this out. Like, I'll give you an example. Again, you don't have to be really smart to get this. I had a friend, his name was Warren, when he was a little kid. He asked his dad for some money to get his mom a birthday present. He wanted to get her a really good present. And so he took his dad's money, went out, bought her a gift, wrapped it up, not in a bag like this, but he got her the present he knew she was going to love. He got her a baseball mitt. And the reason is because he couldn't imagine anybody not wanting a baseball mitt. Who wouldn't want that? His mom hadn't ever played baseball. She ended up giving him the mitt, so it worked well. He expressed love to her, and he got himself a good baseball glove. The differences in us may explain why sometimes our attempts haven't really worked very well, or they didn't have the desired effect. So hopefully this series is going to help us. So we're going to dive right in. We're going to look at this idea of words of affirmation. Another word for that would be words of encouragement. There are a lot of people that are motivated by this. Let me say this too. You're going to find in the Bible that all of these are mentioned. All of these love languages are part of the way God expresses love to us and that he wants us to do for each other. These words of affirmation or encouragement are huge. And we're told over and over again in the Bible that we are to encourage each other. Every one of us have this responsibility for the people around us in our church, in our home, where we work, in our neighborhood, school, whatever we're doing. We need to leave in our wake encouragement to the people around us. Ephesians 4, this is one of those passages that is pretty indicting. It says, don't use foul or abusive language. Let everything you say be good and helpful so that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them. And do not bring sorrow to God's Holy Spirit by the way you live. Remember, he has identified you as his own, guaranteeing that you will be saved on the day of redemption. In other words, because you are one of his children, you now follow his lead, and that means you and I are called to encourage others. That's it. There's no exceptions to it. And in explaining how that works, it goes, get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, harsh words, and slander, as well as all types of evil behavior. Instead, be kind to each other, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, just as God, through Christ, has forgiven you. Your words and mine, spoken or written, have a huge impact, and they have a lot of power. They can do an amazing amount of good. Or they can send crushing blows. It's our choice. Proverbs 12:18, this is one that's really worth memorizing, especially for those of us that tend to not use our words particularly well. There is one who speaks rashly like the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. You got the picture here. You've got a picture of someone that's got a sword by their side, and every time something happens, they whip that thing out. And they just start lashing. They're reactionary. They're the ones that they're not really particularly thinking about the impact of their words. They just want to get them out. Some of us have lived with that. And we still bear the scars of it. You know, there are words that you've heard that you've never been able to get out of your mind. You're an idiot. You'll never amount to anything. You're a fool. You're hopeless. You're worthless. Other words that I won't say here. Some of us have that. I mean, it's like they're tattooed on our eyelids, and every time we blink, we see them. There are others of us that have heard things that they gave us exactly what we needed at the time to keep going. Someone believed in us. Someone that they knew we could make it. They noticed something in us that was valuable that we didn't even see in ourselves. So you've got this idea of someone using a sword and just lashing out however they want, however they feel at the moment. That's using words poorly. And then there's another one that's using words, and it says those words, they bring healing. It's like a surgeon's scalpel, even sharper than a sword, but deliberately wielded in a way that brings healing and help, never to do harm. I've never heard of anyone being stabbed by a scalpel on the subway. You do hear of people being cut with knives and all this other kind of stuff. So what are we going to do? Your words have you've got a choice what you're going to do with them. So I want to give some ways to look at how we use our words. Just a handful of things. One is, you and I need to learn to be observant. I am better at this than I've ever been, but you don't know where I've been, but I'm getting ready to tell you, and I'm not going to look good. Becky apparently likes words of encouragement. She likes all kinds of words. When we were dating, she used to send me these really long handwritten letters. I mean, extra postage required for her letters. I'm not making any of this up. I bought a stack of postcards that had picture on one side, and on the other side, there was room to write, but I liked the ones that had long descriptions of the historical picture on the front so that I could say, thinking of you, Russ. I thought, I'm getting credit. It didn't cost that much to send them. It didn't take a long time to write them. So that's basically what she got into with me. One day we were talking at the house. We've been married for a while. This is really hideous. And she just made this, things were going fine for a moment. And she said something like, you don't really think I'm very funny, do you? I said, what do you mean I don't think you're funny? Yeah, of course I do. She goes, well, you never comment or, you know, you don't react to things I say. I mean, I think you just, you know, maybe you just don't think I'm that interesting. And I responded in what I thought at the moment was accurate and true and would be helpful and would basically eliminate ever having to discuss it again. And I said this, assume I'm amused unless I tell you differently. I really did that. I thought, this is going to cover it. We'll never have to discuss this again. Over the next little while, I realized that my error was pretty egregious. I have not ever said that again. I've said some other boneheaded things, but I'm still trying to figure out. Words mean a lot to her. You're in environments like that. There are people around you that you could encourage, you could help. But if you're not observant enough to know what they need, if you're not aware enough of what matters to them, then you're not gonna do much. And for some of us, that means using more words than maybe we particularly want or we're comfortable with. We might feel like we're being too effusive. I've never been accused of that. And there's a bonus thing about being observant. There's a 90-10 rule when it comes to our words. 90% of our words should be encouraging. And encouraging means to put courage in, to strengthen, to support, to help. 90% words that do that, 10% words that are correcting. I grew up in a home as a kid where the majority of the words I heard were criticism and correction. I decided when I got older that I didn't want to do that, but what I chose to do was just to basically be kind of silent. Assume I'm amused unless I tell you differently. It came from that kind of background. Doesn't excuse it, You're just saying that's the way it is. And you and I need to figure out, we need to use our words regularly, 90% of the time encouraging, whether it's home, work, school, wherever you are. 10% of the time maybe correcting if that's needed. But if you do that in that way, then when a correction comes, it won't be so stark, it won't be so hard, it'll land on softer ears and hearts. Second thing, be observant, then be specific. Don't just generalize. That's really what lazy people do. I could start saying every day now, Becky, you're really funny and clever. Just every day, just plug that one in, because you know I don't want to do the thing I did before, but that's not helpful. You know, what I need to learn is to watch and to let whatever the things I'm feeling inside to come out sometimes in words. Like, she's one of the funniest people I know. Most of the time, she's trying to be. But when she drives the truck, there are times when she's inadvertently funny. The other day, we got this truck, and she was parking it. We've decided now that she needs to go someplace that's got like an extra 100 parking spots where she can park the truck. So she parked it, and she only took two spots this time, and she took a big picture of it, and it's hilarious. And we laugh about it. It's none of this is bad natured. We're not making it. She does it. But for me to say, well, you're really funny, that's not so good. But I say, that video you took of you trying to park that thing was hilarious, and the fact that you shared it with everybody else, that's a pretty good deal. I mean, you lighten people's load, and other people feel better about their own parking. So there's that. And parents, you can be specific with your kids. If you're at work, be specific with the people you work with. Find them, find out when something's going good and use some words to tell them. And be specific. Don't say, you're the greatest employee ever. Well, no, you're probably not. But what you did here was really good. I liked the way you treated that client. You handled an irate client, and you put him at ease. You calmed him down. Way to go. So be observant, and then be specific about what you say. And also, the third thing is be honest. You know, we live in a culture that there's a lot of flattery that goes on. And, you know, normally when we flatter other people, it's because we want something from them. We either want them to get off our back, or we want them to think we're amazing. Usually that will backfire. It'll discourage people when they realize you're being a flatterer, and then they're not going to trust you. So just get away from that. Avoid the kind of lying and exaggerating. Again, you go back to be observant, be specific, and just be honest with somebody. You go to someone's house for a meal, don't say, this is the best meal I've ever eaten in my whole life. Maybe it is, but probably not. But you can say, boy, I really like that. I like the way you put the jalapeno peppers on everything. Even the dessert was fascinating. I actually like pepper, so you may not be able to say that one. But just learn to be honest when you do it, because you want people to be able to trust you. I've got a friend I was talking to recently, and he has a friend that's a musician. The musician just wrote a series of songs and sent it to my friend before it was being released and said, I'd like to get your feedback on it. So here's the challenge. He didn't really like the songs. He liked the other ones that they've done, but these songs, they're not my favorite. And he's thinking, I got to figure out, how do I handle this? If I'm just strictly honest, I could say, well, I think you're terrible, which is not necessarily true, but he didn't like them as well. So what he's doing is spending some time to try to think, how do I communicate about this? And one of the things is, say, you know what? I love your music. These songs are a departure from what you've done in the past. Tell me how you came up with this. You know, that could be encouraging, because an artist being able to explain what they've done, you don't have to come in and say, they're the best songs I've ever heard in my life. That's not true. But you also don't have to go in there and blast someone because you just feel like you have the freedom to do it. It takes some time. It takes thinking things through well. All of us have the capacity to do it. We just need to learn to exercise those muscles. The next one is to be humble. This is going to fit with all of these five love languages we look at, but the humble part means that I need to be willing to take the initiative with others, even if they're not doing it with me. Maybe you'd really like for someone at work to encourage you, to catch you doing things well at work and no one does. You know what we tend to do is either get a new job or we wait. We're not going to do anything until someone comes and does something for me. You and I need to take the initiative. If you want to be appreciated, you want to be respected and all this kind of stuff, step out and show it. It's not that hard. I mean, yeah, is it reminding you, boy, I'd like to have that myself? Maybe so, but you can still step out and do it. As followers of Jesus, we are greatly loved, even if no one else shows it to us. I don't need anything from you. I may want some things, but the moment I think I need something from you, then I'm going to start demanding things, and I'm going to start holding back when I'm not getting. I'm going to start kind of doing fishing expedition. Be humble enough to say, yeah, I'd love something like that, but I'm going to offer it to others around me. And then the other part of humility is just keep learning what those around you need. And this thing about words of encouragement, I know Becky appreciates that. She likes them spoken. She likes them written. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm just different. And so there's some things I've had to learn to do. One of them is, well, I'll get into that in a minute, but I'm having to learn some things because I really do love her. I need to figure out how do I show it. It's the same way with people I work with and people at stores that I go to. What am I going to do? And I need to be humble enough to learn and to change along the way. And don't just wait for like birthdays and anniversaries and promotions and graduations. There's something about that that just doesn't ring as genuine as this last thing, and that is learning to be consistent, learning to build it into our life. Ways to show, in this case of words of affirmation or encouragement, there are definitely ways to do it. A few that I've learned for me, one is whenever I'm coming home, wherever I've been, I almost always call Becky and ask her how her day's been. I know two things. She's had a day, and she's okay with telling me about it. I'm not mailing it in. I'm not pretending. I mean, there's something about driving and talking that I really like. I like it better than just sitting across from someone in a table. That's just the way I'm wired. I'm probably ADD or something. Who knows? But it's a simple thing to do. Every Sunday, I park next door, and I walk over here. And what I do is I pray. I say, God, would you help me? Would you lead me to anyone that could use some encouragement today? Would you help me to have my eyes open to see it, to be aware? And would you use me that way? Then another thing, and I know several people do this, is when someone crosses my mind that I haven't seen in a while or I've been concerned about, I'll stop and pray for them, and many times I'll text them. And I won't generally text and say, how's it going? Sometimes I will, but a lot of times, because I don't want to put pressure on them, but I'll say, you know, you crossed my mind today and I'm praying for you. If you ever get one of those from somebody, it can put a lot of wind in your sails. Rather than wondering, I wonder what they want from me, it's, I crossed their mind. That's pretty cool. So just figure out what you can do, what will help you to, for those around you that need these words of encouragement and affirmation, how can you do it? What can you start now to build that into your life, especially those that are around you frequently? There's a take-home sheet when you leave today that will give you the message notes, but it also gives you a way to figure out how to apply this. I hope you'll take some time. This would be a great thing to do with, as a family or with some friends, just to kind of debrief on it. I'm sure Becky and I will be debriefing because I didn't tell her I was going to say that story, and she's probably going to, well, we'll discuss it over lunch. So anyway, words of affirmation or encouragement, we all have that capacity. We just need to learn to exercise it. Let's pray together. God, we already sung today words that we have had from you that are greatly encouraging. how you love us, how you've accepted us, how you don't treat us as we deserve, but you give us what we desperately need. We, those of us that know you, understand what love is. And as a result of that, we have something to offer others. I pray that you would help us to do that and to see that our words matter. For some of us, we need to do some real scrutiny and filtering the words that we say and write and ask, are these encouraging? Are they helpful? Some of us need to learn to use our words more carefully, more like a surgeon's scalpel. And there may be some of us here today that there's some things we need to go and clear up because we've used our words in a harsh and rash way that have hurt. Please speak to us and help us to be people that love those around us well. Amen.